Hey, this is Will. Welcome back to another episode with Compass. Really excited. We've got Navier, a close partner with Compass on a few different products, especially this one, Hashtest, which is a new way for kind of checking out what's going on with your ASIC behind the scenes from a third party that Navier and Compass just rolled out last week at Mining Disrupt. So really excited to have Josh Metnick, who's CEO of Navier, and David Seinberg on, who kind of heads research. He's the SVP of mining over at Navier. So really excited to have him on. We're going to start the show right now. No further ado.
I hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you do, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on your preferred listening platform. It really helps out the show. The Compass podcast is presented commercial free by Compass, the number one Bitcoin mining marketplace. If you want to get started mining Bitcoin, source hard to find ASICs, or find competitively priced hosting space, then check Compass out at compassmining.io. And now, on to the show.
Hey, Josh. Hey, David. How are you doing?
Good.
Hey, pretty good.
Good. So, David, we caught you on the, or wait, Josh, rather, we caught you on the road as you're heading off to check out a facility. So we're really thankful that we kind of grabbed you here because this is a big announcement for both of us, both for Compass and Navier. Hashtest is a really interesting and new way of checking behind the scenes what your ASIC is doing. And there's a few different things that go along with it that most people don't see. There's some factors behind the doors that people just are not going to think of when they first see Hashtest, and when they first say, oh, I can now see like what the energy efficiency of my ASIC is, and I can actually see if my ASIC is performing up to specifications like the manufacturers give it. So we're going to get into that later into the show, but I want to get a quick bio from both of you. David, maybe we can start off with you. What you do at Navier, how'd you get into Bitcoin, and what are you excited for going forward with Hashtest and Navier?
Sure. I'm David. I'm the SVP of mining technology at Navier. I've been with Navier since early 2018, and I've been mining Bitcoin since 2011. I got into it just because I saw a Wired article that was about malware that was attacking people's wallets. And I was wondering, like, what is this? What's the value here? And I just sort of got drawn in by the math. So I'm pretty excited to be doing this professionally for such a long time at this point. And I think that Hashtest has a lot of potential to try to increase the amount of truth and visibility into what's actually happening when you purchase an ASIC or sell an ASIC.
Awesome. Josh, you and I have kind of emailed back and forth a little bit, but interested to kind of get to know you more a little bit now. What's your bio? Like, how'd you get into Bitcoin, and what do you do at Navier?
Sure. Yeah. So I've been involved in software, well, since I was nine. I've been, I started coding when I was nine. It was an after school program that I was fortunate to be a part of. I think that was 1981. So it dates me a little bit. It was a Texas Instruments 99-4A, a TI-99-4A. And I've just been involved in software ever since. I got involved in Bitcoin 2013. It was June of 2013. It was a friend who gave me one Bitcoin. I think it was around $80 or so at the time. And was fascinated by it immediately. I started mining that evening, trying to mine that evening. So I was on my Mac. I was trying to, CPU mine, getting nowhere. I started learning about ASICs. But what interested me the most about mining was, as I started to learn about Bitcoin, I wanted to understand how it worked. And so I kept kind of going, further and further down into the stack. And I arrived at mining like that, that evening. And and just never, never stopped. So it's been about 8 years now.
Yeah. Do you still have that one Bitcoin? I'll make you answer that.
I went to 300 or something, and I'm like, oh man,
it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a mug. These guys have heard this story like so many times already, but, I have a mug that I keep in the kitchen that I drink out of maybe once a week or so. It's a Butterfly Labs mug. It cost me 22 Bitcoin because I sent them 22 Bitcoin and they never sent me the 650 gigahash Monarch PCI card. There was a lot of bumps, kind of taken along the way, a lot of bruises, a lot of lessons learned along the way. So I try to keep those mementos like around me. But like a lot of us, I probably wish I would have held on to more early on. But yeah, but I got a career out of it. So, hey.
Yeah, I think that's super fair. I think most people have been in Bitcoin longer than probably 2 or 3 years now would say the same. For Bitcoin mining, though, what interested both of you? So both have a software background. Like, what was the thing that got you specifically into the mining sector? Because obviously, there's a lot of places to make money, and there's a lot of things more flashy than mining sometimes. And so it's interesting to see where people just kind of get sucked into this rabbit hole of Bitcoin mining specifically.
I was intrigued mostly by the idea of just like leaving a computer running and having it generate profit for me. I was, you know, looking for passive income at the time, and it just kind of seemed like, you know, a cool way to support tech that I thought was just incredibly cool at the time. You know, I read the original white paper and got really sucked in by just like the logic of decentralization, and just kind of seemed to me like the next logical step. And mining was something that I could do, you know, at home. I could participate in it. I was like CPU mining whole blocks of Litecoin at the time. Because that was a thing that you could do back in the day. I had a miner installed on my iPod Touch, and I remember it was submitting, you know, share after share, and I was just like, wow, this is amazing. How can I get this on as many computers as possible? And once it gets into your brain that you want to keep doing this, it's like, it's really hard to get away from it. It's so much fun.
Yeah, and it was magical. I mean, you know, I think maybe many of us can identify with this, but you know, like when I first started mining, like and still to this day, there's just something that's very tangible about it. And there are like very few computer processes that kind of like result in a you know, kind of like a concrete, kind of tangible, measurable outcome that has value. And there was just something so, I don't know, just so magical, you know, about the process. And it just, I don't know, just kind of drew me in and you know, the hardware, like the hardware side of things, and just the, like the exploration, or like, you know, like trying to figure out where to source an ASIC in 2013 and you know, how to set it up and how to keep it cool. And yeah, it's a very cool space to be in. I don't know. It's a better adjective somewhere.
No, for sure. I want to kind of give some context for our listeners more about Navier. So, Josh, maybe you can take this question. Just give us like the roadmap of where Navier has been, where it's going. What you guys do in the Bitcoin mining sector. And you guys have a lot of fingers everywhere in North America specifically.
Yeah. So Navier, the company really kind of started by accident. Like we never really had a master plan or, you know, some kind of like strategy or something. You know, it really came about because there was an entity that wanted to do a 100 megawatt deployment in late 2017. 100 megawatts today is pretty significant. 100 megawatts in 2017. I thought they were full of it. I didn't think they were actually telling the truth. But I guess somebody knew somebody who you know, referred me and said, well, if you're gonna get in the space, you should talk to Josh because he's got, you know, he's got some war stories and some experience that might be able to help you. So we did some kind of informal consulting with that entity. That worked well. You know, as entranced as I was when I first got into mining in 2013. Seeing infrastructure of 100 megawatt scale in late 2017 was enthralling. I mean, it was mind blowing. I mean, to see a 200 megawatt substation, to see these, you know, 35, it was at an alloy facility, to see these 35 megawatt burners. It looked like something out of Terminator. They're like pouring giant, you know, molten vats into I don't know, like just get a view into that scale of things was just fascinating. And so, so we just started kind of informally, you know, down that path. And now, you know, the company today really has two components to it. There's an infrastructure side. So we help build mines. We work with utility companies that you know, that want to build mines. We help with, you know, just large companies that want to build facilities. But we also have a software side to the company that really grew out of some internal tools that we developed to make our jobs easier in managing these large scale deployments.
Yeah, and I think that's a great segue into talking about Hashtest, which I'm going to throw right over to you, David. Let's talk about Hashtest. What is it and why does it matter? And from our perspective at Compass, we're really excited for the fact that you can verify through a third party the actual hash rate of your ASIC. And of course, there's a few other things that come about with that, like the ability to check the energy mix of your ASIC. And then you can kind of calculate roughly some insurance schemes coming out of that as well. So there's a lot of things to unpack here, but interested to hear your take.
Yeah. So, I mean, you summed up pretty much what it is in a nutshell. The value from it comes when you purchase an ASIC, you frequently don't know what you're actually getting, if you're even actually getting anything, like in Josh's case. but if you look at, you know, any ASIC manufacturer today and you look at their website, they're always selling these things with a hash rate that's marked with plus or minus 5 or 10% variance, right? And that can really add up over, you know, thousands of machines. So especially if you're making larger scale purchases, you want to know that you're getting bang for your buck. These differences come from the way that ASICs are manufactured mostly, which has to do with a process called binning, which is where chips are sorted into, you know, fast, medium, or slow output, essentially, after being tested. And so you get these ASICs that are ASIC as in machine, not just the chip, that are composed of, you know, an amalgam of chips. And that's sort of why there's variance. But when you're making financial decisions like this, 5 or 10% can make a massive amount of difference. So this is a tool that can let you measure more accurately what you're actually receiving at the end of the day. It also is helpful in the case of, you know, the resale market has been taking off a lot recently. So in the resale market, these miners have been running for some period of time already. They've been running, you know, in whatever conditions. And there's some degree of degradation that happens. These machines are not necessarily marked with how much they've been degraded when you purchase them. They're frequently sold, you know, as is. But it's nice to know what as is means. So it's a pretty handy tool for surfacing that.
Yeah, so the binning thing, I think most people don't know about that. And that's something that's kind of being unveiled in front of us right now with what we've seen with this giant shortage across the board, whether it's chips for your Apple computer or chips for your GMC truck. Everyone wants chips right now. And that is a huge topic of discussion, including for Bitcoin miners who are also wanting these chips. So can you kind of walk us through how all these ASIC chips specifically are created and why there's differences in the variants of them, and how hash tests, like more specifically, uses software to help identify shortcomings in those chips, rather on the manufacturing level?
So basically, when ASICs are the chips that is are produced, they're produced on a wafer, and that is basically a slice of silicon with a bunch of different chips created inside of the one single unit. And when those are created, they're evaluated, and that evaluation process tests, you know, how much error or how many errors a chip is prone to produce over time, because it's an imprecise process in some ways and precise in others. There's some degree of error correction that winds up happening in each chip. Sometimes the designs incorporate more or less error correction. But what winds up happening is chips are output with some degree of variance in the actual production or the speed of production of hash rate. So you wind up with typically three bins. There's fast, medium, and slow. And when I say bins, I mean like literal physical bins. So once the chips are tested for speed, they're quite literally subdivided out. And they're recombined then to create ASICs that fall within spec. A manufacturer can actually choose to create ASICs that have been, you know, binned like this and have been measured to be faster, medium, or slower and sell it like that. But that's not super frequent. We've seen some cases where the manufacturer will actually say, okay, we're getting you miners that have chips that are all from the fast bin because they're trying to, you know, pull something or get it's like a leverage option for selling ASICs to people. So because of this variance, you're never sure what you're going to receive when you purchase a miner until you actually plug it in and turn it on. Now, the other thing that winds up being a little bit tricky that I think some manufacturers like to play is whether or not the instantaneous hash rate matches the spec versus what the average over a certain period of time is. So different manufacturers will use different burn-in periods or different test periods for miners, and they may do shorter tests or longer tests, but it really takes running it over the course of probably at least one full day minimum to really understand whether or not a machine is up to spec and whether or not it's producing, on average, the correct amount of hashes per second.
Just for listeners, is there any differences between like a hardware or machine rather, like a MicroBT versus a a Bitmain machine in how this like hash test works out? Like, do you have to, I'm going to ask this question again. Sorry. I got a new puppy in our house and it's, I'm up to lick my legs when I'm talking. So I noticed on the hash test website that there's some slight differences in the inputs you have when you have different types of machines. Is there anything users should be aware of when they're doing or when they're using hash test? And then maybe kind of walk us through hash test, how hash test works itself. Like, what should a user expect when they go to the hash test website and put in their Stratum URL?
Yeah, sure. So for micro BT units, you should not include the hashtag XN sub at the end of the pool URL. That's because hashtest utilizes extranon subscribe as a means of identifying the miner that has connected. So that way you can get your result from your miner fed back to you, basically. Whereas other types of miners do support extranon subscribe. So it's a little bit of a smoother handshake in the Stratum protocol when that's available. So when it's available, it's preferred, and the MicroBTs don't support it. So the process for using hashtest is pretty simple. You go to hashtest.com, and it'll generate for you a Stratum URL and a worker name to put into your miner. You log into your miner locally running on your own network, and you input those, and you click the go button, and you wait for a moment for it to register hash rate. And once it registers hash rate, it begins collecting the report. Once you've gathered enough data, whether that's 1 hour or the full 24, which is what we recommend, you can click the stop test button, and you have that static report page that you can pass around or share publicly or include to people that you're buying or selling from as a static basis. So because it's public, anyone can access it, and that information is like established for that machine, at least at the time of the report. So because you can see when the report was generated, you know that the hash test that was run, 2 years ago may not necessarily be relevant.
So Josh, I want to turn back over kind of to the financial angle on this topic. So we see that there is a growing demand within many markets in Bitcoin mining, specifically for insurance on ASICs. If Marathon is going out and buying a few megawatts of machines, they want a way of ensuring that the machines they got from Bitmain or WhatsMine or whoever are running up to specification. And they often take out insurance policies on top of this. How does hashtest or any other proprietary software similar to this kind of solve that puzzle where you might not be able to tell all the time if your machine is running up to spec? I mean, my gut instinct is that this is often better for someone who's doing colocation or someone who's kind of a retail miner who doesn't have eyes on the ground. Like a Marathon is going to often run their own farm and have their own proprietary system. But this seems like a really powerful tool for smaller players in the industry to understand intimately how their machines work.
Yeah, I think it's valuable for both audiences. And in some ways, a public company, such as Marathon or, a DMG or an Argo or, or whatnot, really any company that has multi-constituent stakeholders might have a need for kind of external auditing. Kind of an unbiased auditing report. I mean, I think there could be significant value there, because there's many points kind of along the mining chain that can be gained or running suboptimally. So we're not a firmware producer. We're not a manufacturer. We don't run a pool. We don't have a large mine or something like that. So our only goal with hashtest is to provide the most accurate readout possible. We don't have any other kind of motivations like pulling us in one way or another. But as one is mining, there's a number of parties kind of along the chain, from the point of the miner to the output of the miner to the network to the the broader internet to the the firmware to the the pool itself. And each one of these it's possible to pull reporting from kind of any one of those points. But each point has a, could have an incentive, right, to misreport hash rate or potentially, slough off some hash rate, for themselves. So there's a lot of value in our independence. And I think, whether you're mining with, 10,000 machines or whether you're mining with, a couple of machines, the budgets tend to be relative. I mean, if somebody spends, $10,000 on one machine, that $10,000 is a lot of money, to that person. It's an investment that person is making, and they want to make sure they're getting what they paid for. I think it's valuable as an auditing tool. Like we had, We've actually had a few public companies, or I think two public companies have reached out to us for assistance on auditing, which is kind of a fascinating use case for the, you know, for the tool.
Yeah, the insurance angle is really interesting because we get a ton of questions about that, just on the content side here about Compass, like how does insurance work in the ASIC market? And to a degree, it's really hard to, first of all, show how the Bitcoin mining market works to insurance agencies, but also where's the data to bring it to them if they would ever be interested in providing insurance for these products? Well, now there is with something like Hashtest, which is really interesting. Another thread to pull on that I'm curious about is pool interactions. There's always, if you go into any Telegram group, it's always like, why is this pool taking too much? They took too much. They're taking some off the top. And I guess now you have a method for testing that. So I'd be interested to see if there's any like data like publicly coming out of this in the next 6 months to a year, kind of showing how each pool's hash rate kind of plays out. I mean, if you do it yourself, pretty simple to see kind of where you're at. But from Compass's angle, that we're just really excited about in general is that you can provide a retail market, and then also you can verify to retail markets that they are actually buying what they're buying. Just like when you buy Bitcoin, you're buying a Bitcoin. I'll leave it open for any closing thoughts from you, David or Josh.
I just think that authenticity, especially in a secondhand market, and especially in an industry as scam laden frequently as crypto, authenticity can be hard to come by. So it's something that we need more of in this space. And I think that we should all be, you know, looking for that in as many ways as we can find it.
Well, thank you so much for both jumping on the podcast last minute. Really appreciate it. And thank you for explaining Hashtest. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Cool.
That's a wrap for the Compass podcast. Thanks for listening. Feel free to check out our prior episodes. Also log into compassmining.io, check out new hardware or facilities. And of course, check out Hashtest, which you can find easily online at hashtest.com. Thanks. Bye.
That's a wrap for us at the Compass Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please subscribe and consider leaving us a 5-star review on your preferred listening platform. Thanks again, everyone. The thoughts and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests on the Compass Podcast are their own and do not represent the opinions of Compass Mining, Inc. None of this content should be considered financial advice.